Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
This is the Spurs Cast with your host, Paul Garcia.
And welcome back to another episode of the Spurs Cast. In today's episode, I'll be joined by Project Spurs writer Colin Reed. Colin and I will discuss the Spurs' season coming to a close, where San Antonio will be heading into the draft lottery, and we'll look back at this season. Let's go ahead and jump right into this episode with Colin. Colin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, man. So I know that the Spurs' season is officially over. The play-in game of the Western Conference just took place last night. You and I are recording this on a Wednesday evening, so the Eastern Conference play-in games are going on. So now it's playoff basketball, but for the Spurs, their season is over. All right, so before we close out the Spurs' season, let's just kind of revisit how their last two games went before the season officially ended over the weekend. So let's go back to Friday. The Spurs are hosting the Denver Nuggets for the final time this season. And in this one, the Spurs got a very surprising win, a really good win for San Antonio. The Nuggets were favored by 12. Denver had their entire playoff lineup available for this game. The Spurs were without five rotation players, but they did have Victor Wembanyama available for San Antonio. The Spurs trailed by 23 points in the second half, and yet they were able to get the game down to crunch time toward the last 5 minutes, and they actually out-executed Denver there, where Devontae Graham ends up getting a really clutch floater shot. And then on the following possession, the Spurs actually hold the Nuggets to a five-second inbound violation, and so the Spurs hold on for this win, and they end up beating Denver here. One of the things I want to talk about Victor in this game was that he had a crazy scoring explosion in the third quarter where he scored about 17 points in about two minutes, 45 seconds. So what he did was he hit a 26-foot pull-up three. Then he gets an alley-oop layup off of a Trey Jones pass. He gets a driving layup. Then he makes a free throw. He ends up making a 29-foot three, a 26-foot three, and then a 29-foot pull-up three. And again, this happened all within like 2 minutes, 43 seconds. He helped San Antonio kind of close that lead that Denver had there. And so Wemby ended up having a big part in that game with 34 points, 12 rebounds, 5 assists, 7 turnovers, 2 blocks, and 1 steal. And then the Spurs, for what they did in this game by beating Denver, is that was now the 10th team playoff level team that they've defeated this season. 10 of their 22 wins have been against playoff level teams. So that's about 45% of their wins. They've shown that they can play some pretty good ball games against some of the better ball clubs in the NBA. Then on Sunday, we're not going to spend too much time on this game. The Spurs sat out Wemby for that final game. Was it right ankle injury management? And then, but they still didn't really need Wemby in this game. Detroit was just so bad. The Spurs end up blowing out the Pistons by 28 points on this night or this afternoon in San Antonio on Sunday. The Spurs going into this game, they actually had a chance to get the third worst record spot. Because Charlotte actually won their game against Cleveland. And so that was actually on the table. But no, the Spurs players, didn't really care about where draft lottery standings and things like that were. They went out and they played and they actually, they demolished Detroit here with the 28-point win. And so because of that, the Spurs will have the fifth worst record going into the lottery. So we're going to talk about that a little bit later. First, I just want to get your thoughts on the Spurs' final two games to close up the season with 22 wins and 60 losses.
Yeah, I think... that Nuggets game is just an indication of something that we've been saying since mid-December, that this team looks different than the team that started the season, And I know that this team had exactly the same number of wins as last year's team. But, if you take the team that they ended the season with and put them in a 7-game series with the team that ended the season last year, like, that's a sweep, probably. This team is much improved. I think, there's a lot of wins and loss numbers watching, where it's like, well, how do you add Wemby and lose more games, And I think some of that was the idea of, because this is Wemby's first year, this is the only time to get to experiment with that stuff. Can't say Harden be a point guard and that kind of stuff. But how well they played in that Nuggets game just showed. And I think what's striking to me, you mentioned 10 of their wins came against playoff opponents. Two of the other ones there were against the Timberwolves, who they played fairly well in at least a couple other games of the season. And the Thunder, like they beat the three top teams in the West throughout the season. And I think that just goes to show the competitiveness of this bunch. You know, I think, you know, you and I really like looking at the numbers and stuff, and this is harder to quantify. But I think when you have someone on your team who's kind of leading the way, whose spirit is kind of like Wimby's apparently is, where like he wants to win every game. He doesn't care if they only have 20 wins. You know, he doesn't care if it doesn't mean anything anymore. You know, he's going to go out and he's going to try his hardest. And then you have guys on the bench. Like, I think one of the things that really has just surprised me about the end of this season is just the, and again, this is one of those kind of more soft topics than like hard, fast stuff, but like just the professionalism and the character of Devonte Graham, because I think for so many people, that'd be so easy to get like tuned out. Like, hey, I'm a good enough player to be playing in a rotation. I'm good enough to be doing things. He's not for most of the season, probably just because the younger players, they want to see who those players are and get them reps and stuff. But he was always like a team player on the bench when he participated in like the team videos. He was always like great doing that. And then when they finally did call his number, like he came up big. And I just, to me, that's such a small thing, but I feel like it really speaks to kind of him as a player and him as a person, just that you can maintain that. I know for me personally, if I was sitting on the bench for 80 games, I would be like, nah, I'm done. Yeah. And I don't know if I could do it the way that he did. And so, yeah, I think it just goes to show where this team is at mentally. And I think that's a really good sign for them going forward. Like, no matter how bad the season was, they ended winning 7 out of 11 games.
Yes.
And I think this team has really good mental makeup, which will be important as next season is about winning more games and surviving through an 82 game season.
Yeah. Just kind of what you said there was the fact that they have a guy like Victor who kind of gives them a chance in every game, regardless of who else is on the floor. And we saw that, like you said, seven of their last 11 games, they ended up winning. And sometimes these were games without Keldon Johnson, without Devin Vassell, without Jeremy Sochan. And just the fact that you have Victor out there, this is a very competitive group. And I would just say even a larger sample size is just how they ended from post All-Star break. You know, going into All-Star break, they were 11-44. Post All-Star break, they end up finishing the season 11-16. Again, same amount of wins in a shorter time span, just about 2.5 months, but much fewer losses. I mean, almost like, you know, just 5 games below .500. So that's a pretty good sample size. And I know, of course, last season they did end pretty well as well. I went back and they won 3 of the last 5 games. But again, a 7 out of 11 is a better, you know, is a larger sample size. Same thing for the All-Star break to go 11-16. That was some key information there, like you mentioned there. So I had another thought, but I already forgot. If I remember it, I'll kind of bring it back. It was something about what you said about Graham. But I can't recall what it was. So anyway, yeah, just to kind of how he stayed professional thing, and he was ready to go regardless out there. All right. So now we do want to talk a little bit though about the lottery situation. So again, because the Spurs did finish with the 5th worst record, that's where they're going to end up going into the lottery, that they're going to have some of those percentages of the 5th worst record team. So basically, their top three areas are the highest odds for them or to either land the 7th pick at 27% odds, the 6th pick at 20% odds, and then the 3rd pick's at 11% odds. And then, of course, you know, the Spurs have a chance at 1st, 2nd, and 4th, 8th, 5th, and 9th. So basically, 7, 6, and 3rd are probably your key areas to watch for where the Spurs might get that pick. One thing to note, though, is that history just showed us that even if you're the 5th worst team, you can move up pretty quickly. We saw that last year with Portland. Basically, the Blazers entered as the 5th worst team going into the lottery. Then lottery night happens and they actually moved up to 3rd and they ended up drafting Scoot Henderson there. So again, Portland just showed us that a year ago that you can move up even if you didn't get quite the position that you wanted maybe in the lottery order. And then regarding the Raptors pick, the Raptors did finish with the 6th worst record, and same thing here where that right now their highest odds are to end up either 7th, 8th, or 4th. And again, 7th is a 30% odds, and then 8th is 21%, and then 4th is just 10%. So there's a huge difference there. And so again, if their pick, the Raptors, ends up 7th, 8th, 9th, or 10th, it's going to go to San Antonio. Whereas if it's 1st, 2nd, 3rd, or 4th, or 6th, or 5th, it's going to end up staying with Toronto. So again, odds-wise, they have a good chance, San Antonio, of picking up the Raptors pick in this coming draft based on where the Raptors finished. What are your thoughts on just kind of how they finished out their record?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I'm looking at this in kind of a way of like, it's pretty crazy that the two picks the Spurs have are the 5th and the 6th pick, because And the fact that, you know, if the Raptors pick is sixth or lower, it doesn't convey, you know, I'm not quite as freaked out about that, especially since next year's draft and the year after that might be stronger drafts. And I think that it goes out at least two more years after this one. So I think that that's conveying as a first round pick at some point. But really, the Spurs have given themselves some kind of insurance here, because for them to get the sixth pick or worse and not get Toronto's pick, they would have to have the really unfortunate situation of them not moving up and the Raptors moving up. And that's like a very low chance for both of those things to happen. So either they get like a top five pick, or even if they get a worse pick, there's still a pretty good chance they'll keep the Raptors pick. And I just, you know, it's very interesting because you look at these things and your eyes are drawn to, okay, well, the Spurs' biggest odds here are getting the seventh pick. That's a 27% chance, basically. But then another way to look at it is, well, it's basically a 42% chance that they'll get a top four pick,
yes,
which is quite a bit higher than the 27% for the 26th or for the seventh pick. So, and then for the Raptors to get seventh or worse, that's about a 54% chance. So, you know, the odds are looking good. These are basically like coin flips at this point. You know, the Spurs can walk away from the draft with two really good picks, or even like the six and the seven or something. And if that happens, you know, in history, teams have been able to kind of package picks right next to each other for things that are pretty valuable, because it gives a lot of teams a lot of control over the board at that point in the draft. So, or they just get to pick two players in a row. So yeah, it's, I think where they landed is pretty good. I think especially because there's not that guy. Like if this was next year and the Spurs were completely out of the playoffs, I know that you can't make Wimby not try, but to do anything to worsen your odds at getting Cooper Flagg is probably like team mismanagement on some levels. But with the draft that it is this year, I think they put themselves in pretty good positions while also like showing their team that they're committed to being competitive going forward.
Okay. Yes. And I totally agree with you there. And just to remind listeners that the next key date for the Spurs is that draft lottery, which will be taking place on May 12th. So again, early next month, the draft lottery will take place, and we'll see again if where the Spurs land in there in the draft, and also where if they get that Raptors pick this year. If not, they'll have to look for it for next year. All right, so for our next topic, Colin, we're just going to kind of just each pick two players that kind of is interested us this season from the Spurs' main rotation. So I say, again, when I say main rotation, we're talking about the players who are pretty much played over 60 games this year for San Antonio. So that's the starters. That could be Wemby, Devin Vassell, Trey Jones, Jeremy Sochan, Julian Champagne. Or off the bench, you had Keldon Johnson, Blake Wesley, Malachi Branham, Zach Collins, and Jetty Osman. All right, so I'll let you go in and start first. Who's one of the first players you want to discuss here that interests you?
I'm going to open it with Keldon, actually.
Okay.
And the reason why is because I was just thinking about the season yesterday and I was kind of going through things. I was thinking about next season. And I don't know, maybe after 5 or 10 minutes, I realized I haven't thought once about Keldon Johnson. You know, like I feel like with all of the growth that's happening from so many of these players and with all of the excitement with Wimby and that kind of stuff, I feel like he's kind of been the odd man out in some of these things in terms of both the attention he's getting, in terms of, oh, well, there's so much potential from Vassell and Sochan and Wimby. And I think Keldon is closer to, you know, kind of the ballpark of where he's going to be as a player. And so I think for me, it's just getting very interesting because I think next year, hopefully, as they continue to, you know, this is kind of the path of a young team. You know, next year, they'll probably be closer to the play-in, maybe a little bit higher or lower or whatever. They'll be a little bit more competitive. And then the year after that, they'll try to make an even bigger jump. And I think my big question is, A, will Keldon be on the team when that big jump happens? And then B, if he is he that kind of player, which a lot of role players are, where context matters? Because, you know, like when the Nuggets win the title, there's a lot of talking about how good KCP was in that playoff run. Mm-hmm. But if he was on the Pistons, no one is really talking about KCP. And there's a player like that every year where they're a role player who plays really well in their role. And I think the context matters a lot. And I think the important thing for the Spurs to find out about Keldon is he that kind of guy where his value kind of grows as the team importance and winning culture grows. And if so, like that's a very valuable player to have. But I think, you know, it was just a very interesting year because he is such a dynamic guy with a loud personality, and that's kind of his play style too. And yet I feel like his season kind of went under the radar a little bit, despite all that.
Okay, so let me just go through the numbers, kind of what he had this year, or how he finished. So he played, he was able to play in 69 games for the team. We know that he got, you know, about like mid December or early January, he went to the sixth man role, off the bench. So he ends up scoring 16 points a game this season. Shoots 35% from three when we round his numbers. 3.2 free throw attempts, 5.5 rebounds, 2.8 assists to 1.4 turnovers. And that's kind of the stats there that pop out to me. Regarding his contract, he did sign that extension, I think a year ago. And so he is still under contract for three more years coming into this coming season. So he's under contract. Kind of what you said there, I feel like they don't really know where he fits in this group. It's basically what we saw this season. I mean, I know that Pop had mentioned, when they first made that move to the bench, one, it was like to give the bench some support, some energy, some scoring, some stability, which is what Keldon's going to bring you there. But then also it was more so to let Wemby and Devin get more creative on offense, to have more opportunity to create for themselves and other, and kind of grow their offense a little bit. And so that's, again, a sign that the team didn't quite know where he fit. And then, like you said, there was nights where you forgot that he was on the team at certain points. You know, you definitely see his hustle, his energy. You know, he's in there, you know, attacking the defense as often as possible, trying to get inside. But as far as his fit, that's kind of, already just going into next season, I don't see that he fits again in that starting lineup, where he's kind of, he needs the ball a little bit more to be able to do stuff. And when you're flanked alongside Wemby and Vassell, it is a little bit more difficult to do that. And so that's where either they're going to, I think that they'll give him one more shot at being that sixth man and kind of still continue to grow in that role and be effective. Or maybe he's one of those players that maybe they do look at, you know, possibly moving via trade, because like I said, he's on a good contract for the next 3 years here. He's still a productive player. And like you said, maybe there's a team that has a better role for him, whether that's in a starting lineup or off the bench. So I think, yeah, he was definitely a very interesting player to watch. And I think he's one of those players to definitely keep an eye on this summer.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that too is, you know, when it comes to talking about trading Keldon Johnson, I know that there can be some sensitivity about kind of naming any sort of player, you know, like I know that there was kind of a pushback at one point of like, oh, you know, Keldon loves this team, Keldon loves this city. Why do people always bring up Keldon as being traded? And it's, you know, I can't speak for everyone, but I know for me and for you, because of how we look at this, it's not necessarily about, oh, Keldon is a good personality for the team or whatever, or Keldon is a good player or a bad player for the team or whatever. It's really that when you look at his role and his contract, if the Spurs are going to make a trade where they bring in like a significant player, so many of the constructions kind of need him in that trade for it to work the right way. So, you know, his contract is kind of perfect for those kind of trades. And I think that's why a lot of the times Keldon Johnson does come up in those conversations, not because anyone necessarily wants him traded, but just because, you know, I know Devin's extension is going to hit on the new league year, and the Spurs aren't trading Devin for anything less than, you know, like a top three MVP candidate, you know? So like, it's just him and Collins, once he's eligible to be traded. These are like the only two players who are like kind of tradable and have a contract that can help make this match. So it's kind of difficult, because I think his name will be in that discussion for a while, just because he is the only guy whose contract really fits the bill.
Okay. The next player that I want to discuss is Malachi Branham, because he had a pretty good ending to the season here. Of course, a lot of players were out in the rotation, so he got to start and get some extra minutes. So let's try to just run through his baseline numbers. So 9.2 points per game this season, 42% shooting, 35% on threes. That was actually one of the things he did. He actually shot over 33% from three at 35%. He actually did a good job on his wide open threes. Two rebounds, 2.1 assists to 1.2 turnovers. And so for him, I would just say it was more of a roller coaster. Kind of started off a little slow at the beginning. He had a little bit of a surge. I want to say it was in January or February. Then he kind of regressed a little bit. But then we saw with the injuries and him getting the starting spot, he was actually, you know, putting up some numbers here toward the end of the season and being a very productive player. And like I said, he definitely had his three ball going there at the end of March and early April. And so I think for my interesting question about him is like, there's going to probably be a spot for him if Jetty Osman ends up, you know, leaving a free agency. You know, there's going to be some wing minutes there off the bench. And so I wonder too, you know, how well, you know, how much more of a consistent player will he be going into next year? That's kind of my question is can he be that player who you know, they can rely on there in the second unit more often than not. And even like you said, if they end up moving Keldon and then maybe Branham becomes that guy that they need to be that six man kind of scorer for them. What were your thoughts on his season?
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Yeah, I kind of thought exactly what you did, where when he was drafted and we heard, you know, Ben and other people who are knowledgeable at the draft, and especially seeing him in like summer league last summer, but especially this most recent two summers ago and then this most recent summer, you know, the idealized version of him, the realized version of him, is like that three level scorer who can shoot it from anywhere on the floor and be a threat at any place, you know. And he might not be creating a lot of those shots on his own, but, you know, if he finds an open three, he's going to take it and make it and that kind of thing. And I think he had been pretty good at knocking down the mid-range shots, but it was like after he came back halfway through the season where the three started feeling quite a bit more reliable, you know? And I think just the fact that you can like bend the floor with something like a Trey Wimby pick and roll, Trey Jones, like whichever way you do it, you know, if it's 5-1 or 1-5, and then you have a player on the perimeter who can knock down a shot from the gravity that creates, you know, that just makes such a big difference for this team. And I think that there's no coincidence that once kind of he's a little bit more steady as a shooter, the wins do go up. Cause I just think it's one of those things where if you can create an advantage on the offensive end, which every Wimby pick and roll really can, and then you have shooters who can knock down the open shot, now all of a sudden your offense is going to look a lot better. Cause I think, you know, that was a lot of the problem throughout a lot of the season for the Spurs, is that some of these numbers that are maybe more attributable to luck, like opponent three-point shooting, were just like not going in their way. But the fact that they have a player who can kind of take advantage of an advantage on offense, I think changes how the offense looks quite a bit.
Okay. Who is the next player you want to discuss?
So for me, it was going to be Trey Jones, actually, I think, because
he was like him and Wesley were on my list. So go ahead. I'll let you
start. So I think part of it is because this season was so interesting for him. You know, I think the big discussion that a lot of people are going to have going forward is, did the Spurs look so good with Trey Jones and Wimby on the court because Wimby plus any traditional point guard looks good? Or was it that Trey Jones specifically had a good season? Because I think that that's starting to get kind of swept under the rug a little bit, that Trey Jones was good this season, because I think a lot of people were like, oh, Pop's not even playing a point guard. And then Trey Jones comes in and they're like, oh, see how good they are when they play the point guard. But I think part of that is how good Trey Jones was and his chemistry that he developed with Wimby. You know, like, again, we just talked about it, that 1-5 pick and roll or the 5-1 pick and roll, which worked pretty well. And it's just, you know, this team won 22 games. And for a lot of the season, they were so bad. And the fact that lineups with Vassell and Trey Jones and Wimby were as good as they were, like, the lineup that had the 5-man lineup that had those three players on it that played the most minutes, it was 404 minutes. They had a plus 3.3 net rating. And then the next one played only 142 minutes, but they had a plus 20.8. You know, like the lineups when those three players were out there were very good. And I think the Spurs, you know, probably have a better indication internally, kind of like what is needed from that position for them. And I think that'll determine a lot of how their offseason goes. But I think that a lot of that was just how good Trey Jones was throughout the season. You know, he's a high effort player. He's a very intelligent court reading. He has a high court awareness. And so, yeah, I think just the fact that he was started to star and, you know, his chemistry with Wimby was probably always one of the better chemistry pairings with Wimby on the team, but it got even better as the season went on.
And so what I think he does for them is he gives them the front office, at least he gives them a little bit of I don't know, maybe wiggle room or just like more versatility, I would say, the front office. So here's what I mean by that. They know they have a starting point guard now, like if they need to kind of take the more conservative, slow approach of building this team out and just having, you know, Trey start another season. He's going to be a player. Like you said, he had gains this year. I mean, he averaged, I'm looking at his numbers right now, 10 points a game this year, 51% shooting from the floor. Yes, he still struggles from three in the arc three, but his wide open three percentage was more efficient this year. His corner three was more efficient. So he actually shot 33.5% from three this year. He took a little bit more attempts as well. One thing I liked that he did was he took less mid-rangers and he started taking more three-point shots. When he did drive in, he took a fewer floaters and actually tried to get to the rim and finish with layups. I know it wasn't often. Maybe that's one of the things about him is he's not as aggressive, but he's out there to be the point guard and kind of be your more normal quarterbacking kind of point guard who sets up the offense. 6.2 assists to just 1.5 turnovers. Again, excellent numbers there. So that's what I mean about the front office can be very versatile with how they approach this offseason in terms of point guard. So basically, they want to take a slower approach and maybe not go after a star point guard. Well, then I think they're fine and they're comfortable just having Trey start again alongside Wimby, because like you said, everything that you mentioned there about just how the numbers that they were putting on the floor together, the chemistry that they've built together. Or if they want to go out and try to make a splashy move, maybe try to trade for you know an all-star level point guard like a Darius Garland, a Trae Young kind of player, then that's fine because Trae can just move to the bench and he can he's going to be a really good reliable backup as well. So I think that's one thing about him having a really good season that he did for the Spurs is that he gave their front office that comfort where they don't have to go out and get a point guard again. They have a decent point guard there who can take care of the job for now for another season there in Trae Jones, and he is under contract next year for one more year. I didn't want to say. So I guess that's gonna my follow-up question for that after we discussed Trae Jones is my next player is Blake Wesley. Because we saw, of course, he got more minutes this season. The Spurs were able to give him minutes out there. Defensively, he just hounds players. That's the reason why Pop wants him out on the floor. Just kind of the energy that he brings there on opponents and possessions. He's guarding the full length of the court. Offensively, he still has a little bit of struggles here. Again, four points per game. Shot 47% from the floor. 3-point shots not quite there just yet. 2.7 assists to 0.9 turnovers. Doesn't really just kind of moves the ball when he gets on it. But I think for him, it's going to be more so about what do the Spurs do at guard, whether they draft a player, whether they go out and trade for a player. Because like I said, if they end up trading for an all-star level player at point guard, well, then Trae goes to the bench and then it's like, where does Wesley exactly fit? So I think that's one of the things to watch. And if Trae ends up being the starting point guard again, then I think Wesley is kind of where he needs to make a little bit more growth. More so I would say on the offensive end going into this next year. What are your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think, for me, he was definitely another player that was on my short list of the guys to talk about here, just because I think his season was so interesting from the standpoint of, when he had that rough summer league, it was kind of like, okay, he's back in Austin at the beginning of the season. And you just are wondering, like, is he going to stick in this rotation? Versus like halfway through the year, now he is the point guard off the bench and he is playing an important role and he ends up having the fourth best plus minus on the team. But I think a lot of that has to do with his defense, like what you're saying. And I just think the way that he was able to take that kind of energy and aggression that he has and funnel it into the defensive end made all of the difference in the world for him, just because you can see how much energy he plays with. But I think, before he's putting a lot of it on the offensive end and he was, the game is still slowing down for him and that kind of stuff. But I think he realized that if you do that on the defensive end, and especially with the physical tools that he has, Pop doesn't really have a choice but play you, especially when a lot of the team is kind of so poor on defense. And so, like you're saying, I think the offense will be a big thing. I think for me, though, especially in today's era, I think I would be more optimistic about a player gaining and growing in the skills on offense than on defense. I think with the shooting coaches that are available nowadays and with the way that things are spaced out, I think it's easier to get better on offense than defense. And if you're going to be ahead on one of them at this point, the fact that it's defense is really good. So I just thought, the fact that he went from kind of a fringe rotation player to like solidly their backup point guard was a really big story for them. And I think it also, kind of like what you said, it what's interesting is if Trey Jones goes to the bench because they bring in another all-star or something like that, what happens with Wesley? Because he is almost too good now to be completely out of the rotation. Yeah. I mean, the combination of good and young, really. So that makes it very interesting as well to me, just in terms of kind of if they do make some big moves in the offseason, or like you said, if they draft a point guard with the third pick, you know, are they really going to be the third point guard in the rotation? So I think him being good actually gives the Spurs more questions this offseason in terms of how they want to structure that position. But I think those are good questions to have. I was just excited to see kind of the trajectory the season took for him.
Okay. So now for our next topic here, what we're going to do is we're going to basically pick, you know, one area of the floor that kind of interested us, you know, in terms of some of the numbers and where the Spurs finished compared to last year. And you don't have to dive into like an entire set. You can just maybe pick one area. So I'm going to, if you're okay, I'm going to start this first because I kind of want to pick your brain here on this on this topic. So one thing I want to focus on is what I call the math, basically, you know, the Spurs scoring on twos, and then their opponents scoring on twos, and then the Spurs scoring on threes, and their opponents scoring on threes, and then the free throws, et cetera. So anyway, the reason why this interested me is because of how much progress they made in the three-point area and also the free throw area. So let me explain this. Last season, they lost threes by 375 three-pointers. So basically, opponents made 125 more three-pointers than San Antonio. They also lost the free throw line by 204 points. Fast forward to this year, they only lost the three-point line by 12 points, which is equivalent to four made threes. That's crazy. Like a team that got outscored by 125 threes last year only lost it by the opponent only made four more threes this past season. Also, the free throw line. Again, last year, opponents made 204 more free throws than San Antonio. This year, they made just 36 more. So there was some of that, though, you know, of course, you know, with the Spurs closing the gap there in the 3-point and free throw scoring, we did see more opponents, you know, got a bigger advantage in the 2-point scoring. But overall, they did make, like you said, even though they're a 22-win team, they made progress compared to last season. I think last season, their point differential was minus 10 every game. This year, it was down to 6.5. And we see that there was like a 300-point scoring difference here. So I guess that's my question to you is I started noticing that I think after All-Star break, dude, they were winning or tying the 3-point line like almost every night with their opponent. They would actually outshoot teams a lot of nights. And it's just something that I know that they don't have like a lot of you know, efficient 3-point shooters. I think they ended up finishing the season 28th in 3-point accuracy. But I mean, that's something that's a part of the game that they're kind of closing that gap. And I think that's very that's very instrumental going forward, because, you know, that's one of the areas that you do want to try to win out on the floor is the 3-point opportunity and that kind of ball game out there, especially with the fact that Victor, we know he's going to get triple to double teamed almost on a nightly basis and in different sets from the defense. So kind of give me your thoughts on that, just the kind of gap that they close, and also, you know, going forward, what that might mean for this team.
Yeah. You know, for the 3-point line, actually for both of them, but starting with the 3-point line, what's interesting is, it might not make a whole lot of sense at first, but they're actually doing a lot better at the 3-point line, specifically because of Wimby's rim protection. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is, you know, the best 3-point looks in the league nowadays are pull-up shots, they're catch and shoot. They're not just pull-up shots. And so a lot of the times how an offensive possession will look is they have a primary ball handler who will have some sort of action, whether it's a ball screen or they just drive. And then there's going to be some sort of action on the weak side. And then the ball handler is able to make the choice of trying to score himself, passing it off to someone that's in the lane with him, like a big man or someone in the dunker spot, or passing it out to the 3-point line. The deterrence that Wimby has given to other teams from even stepping into the paint at all has changed the geometry of the court for the Spurs, because 3-point shooters are having a much harder time getting open because the defense isn't having to collapse into the middle, because teams just aren't going into the middle because they see Wimby there and they back away and go somewhere else. So that means that these shooters are left stuck, and you're stuck in a situation where a ball handler is maybe making a tough mid-range shot. And generally, the guy who has the ball in his hands can make those, which might be part of why you see the 2-point differential getting wider. But, you know, because the 3-point shooters aren't as open because players can stay home, the 3-point differential got way closer, which I think is a really positive sign for them.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And then also, like, on the opposite, on offense, like I said, Wemby's drawing in all the attention. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more opportunity for threes. And I think also, like I said, some of the players have deliberately, that we saw that their shot selection, they went to more three pointers, like a player like Trey Jones. There's some different other kind of players out there on the floor as well. So I think that that's another thing, is like the current players will continue to try to work on that part of their game and try to get more accurate, because they know they're going to get, you know, a bunch of open looks when teams collapse on Victor, or the front office will, you know, deliberately, you know, try to either draft players that are focused on shooting or you know, sign players via free agency or maybe trade for players. Like, I think that's, it makes it an easier approach of how you're trying to scout different kind of players out there. So I think that was a huge gain for San Antonio. Just the fact, man, mm-hmm. to go from losing, you know, opponents mix 125 3-pointers, then now just 4 more. That was crazy. The numbers that you saw there. Was there any other area of the floor that you were interested in discussing?
I was going to look at that real quick, but also what you were talking about, the free throws, just real quick with the math game on that, because I think one of the things that's impressive is the Spurs have several like stud defenders, and they have a couple other good defenders. But, you know, like if you're looking at Wimby, Sochan, and Blake Wesley, those players are all young. And the fact that they were 6th in the league at opponent free throws made, despite the defenders being so young, because I think that's a really difficult thing for most of the young defenders in the NBA. They might come in and they're good, except they're still learning the habits of not mm-hmm. drawing fouls constantly. And the fact that even though all of these players are first or second year players, and the Spurs still ranked 6th in defense, I think that goes, that is pretty cool to see. I think for me, looking at the defense, the Spurs ranked basically bottom 20 in every defensive category last season.
Yes, yeah. Everything's red.
It's all red.
Yeah.
And it's, a lot of them are like that this year too, but two of them aren't. And the fact is that they go together really well to show that the Spurs are closing out possessions better on the defensive end. And that's opponent offensive rebounding percentage, mm-hmm. which they've risen 11 ranks in that. And then blocks, which they've ranked 23 ranks in that. And so if you're blocking opponents as frequently as they are, and if you're not letting them get offensive rebounds as frequently as they are, they're ending possessions so much more frequently than they were last season. You know, last season, it might have been the case where already teams have a really high field goal percentage against them, maybe 30th in the league. But if they do miss, they're grabbing the offensive rebound and shooting again. So I think your defense looks a lot better when you're able to end possessions. And I know that that's also something that Pop really hammers home, is like, you got to grab the rebound to get the stop. And this season, they were just doing a lot more to end those possessions on the offensive side. And I think that's what really stood out to me. And that's part of what makes, I think, Wemby kind of like a one-man defense. But I think just those two things together mean that even if the other things are red, you can get away with it a little bit more, because the possessions aren't going on 3 or 4 shots for the opponent.
Yeah, and then something just to add is that just the fact that, yeah, this is the entire team data. When we just look at Wemby's data, you know, out there on the floor, we know that they're a top 5 defense already, and that's the thing. And think about this. He only played 29.7 minutes this year. Next year, in year two, he's going to get a big bump. So now he's going to be out there on the floor more often, which is going to have an impact following, you know, your defense. And then, of course, you know, Sochan will be more comfortable alongside him. Blake Wesley, like you mentioned, some of the other players that have been, like, in the starting group will be out there as well. And then, of course, whoever they draft or trade for, you know, maybe they'll go looking for, you know, some defensive type of players as well. So that's kind of what we want to do in this episode, Spurscast listeners, kind of just dive into some players who interested us this season going into the next season, and also some of the numbers that the Spurs put up for this past season. So again, next key date is May 12th, when the draft lottery will take place. We'll see where the Spurs' pick will come from. All right, so I want to say thank you to Colin for joining me here on this episode of the Spurscast. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, rate, and review on YouTube and your favorite podcast apps. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Paul Garcia. From all of us at Project Spurs, stay safe and have a great day.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.